Welcome to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. As GLP-1 medications like Ozempic gain popularity, some users report feeling more confident and outgoing, while others experience anxiety, depression, and changes in sleep patterns. Couples have reported shifts in their relationship, with partners feeling disconnected and heightened levels of jealousy and insecurity. These changes have been called Ozempic personality on social media. But are these changes caused by the drug itself or the dramatic lifestyle shifts that come with weight loss? Dr. Supatra Tovar is a clinical psychologist and registered dietitian, also the author of the book Deprogram Diet Culture. She's helping to bridge the gap between the physical health and mental health part of this. Welcome to All Sides, Dr. Tovar.
Thank you so much for having me.
So could these mood shifts, the irritability, anxiety, the emotional changes be linked to the drug itself, or do you think they're a result of extreme lifestyle changes?
Well, that in terms of change in mood, that hasn't been a reported side effect as much, but I think is just kind of an offshoot of what happens when taking these medications. A lot of people think, oh, okay, I'm going to go on this medication. It's going to be this magic pill. I'm going to lose all this weight, and then I'm going to be accepted and loved by everyone in society. And what they experience, however, is a lot of body dysmorphia during the time that they're on the medication. So they may be losing all of this weight, but they also may just still be in the mindset that they're overweight. And so the struggle between what people are saying and what they're feeling causes a lot of depression and anxiety and confusion. So there's a lot that happens when you're taking this medication psychologically. And that's why I think it's so important to have a full supportive team around you if you're going to be on it.
Yeah, the idea of a magic pill to help you lose weight has been something people have wanted forever. for decades. Everyone just says, why is it so hard? Why do I have to exercise and eat healthy? And it's just too hard. And so now we have what seems like a magic pill because it works for a lot of people. But now the magic pill is not entirely magical. Is that what's happening?
Well, I think that it's not that dissimilar from a diet. And this is, where I focus a lot of my work is that diets don't actually work. They lead to greater weight gain. So in order to maintain the weight loss on something like Ozempic, you have to be on that forever. And I don't think a lot of people are prepared to do this. I just saw a recent study that most people will go off of the medication before its optimal dose. And that can be for a variety of reasons, such as the affordability of the medication, which we know it's very expensive, but also the tolerability of the medication. There are so many side effects that occur, and there can be so many problems, specifically malnourishment, but also some graver problems that can happen, such as gastroparesis or the complete cessation of your digestive system, which is very problematic. You've also seen a lot of people not be able to have surgeries because even if they're fasting for 24 hours, the medication slows the emptying of your digestive system so much that even 24 hours later, you still have food in your system. And so there's just so many difficulties and problems with staying on this that, even if you're losing a lot of weight while you're on it, the problem is when you go off of it, what happens? Will you regain it all and more most likely? And the answer is it's most likely you will. So there isn't a magic pill. And I think a lot of people think that you have to work so hard to lose weight. You have to have so much willpower and you have to go on a restrictive diet. And what I teach people is that that's actually what's leading to your weight gain is your restriction. When you're not listening to your body's signals, when you're trying to override them, your body doesn't like it. And it goes into an emergency mode, into survival mode. And it actually restricts your long-term weight loss, even though you might be losing weight for the short term. And I see Ozempic as very similar to that.
There's couples who are reporting emotional distance or even relationship breakdowns if one partner starts taking one of these GLP-1 medication and the other is not. Are you seeing that? Are you hearing from people about couples having problems related to these drugs?
Oh, yes, absolutely. I think, there can be a whole host of things that go on, such as if one person starts to lose weight and becomes more, attractive and socially acceptable, they may have more people looking at them and checking them out or even hitting on them. So the other person in the relationship can experience a lot of feelings of jealousy, insecurity in the relationship, and they don't necessarily know how to handle this kind of newfound confidence. On the other end of the spectrum, you may see somebody who's really having a difficult time on the medication and losing a lot of weight or becoming very malnourished or having these mood problems and dysregulation. And that can be very disturbing to somebody because, for example, I know of somebody who started to take one of these medications and was only ingesting maybe 800 calories in a day, which is very, very, very dangerous for you. And their partner noted, all of these difficulties that she was having, just not even being able to stand up for very long and having a lot of mood swings, and was very concerned. So you may see, the other partner experiencing a lot of distress watching their partner having these symptoms. So I think that it's about imbalance. It can be about jealousy and it can be about concern.
So this, when you say someone is only ingesting 800 calories, is it because the drug makes you feel full or it makes you not feel like you don't have an appetite? Is that what's happened?
Both.
Both, yes.
Yes, both. It definitely de decreases your appetite and it slows gastric emptying. So you stay fuller for longer on less food. And if you're not really carefully monitoring your intake, you can really become malnourished, especially if certain foods don't look appetizing, especially foods that may have vitamins and minerals and fiber that your body really needs. If you're not eating those, you could become very malnourished.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking with Dr. Supatra Tovar, a clinical psychologist and dietitian and author of the book Deprogram Diet Culture. Now, your book is all about breaking down or breaking free, rather, breaking free from the harmful diet culture. So do you think the rise of these medications fits into that? Are they now becoming a part of harmful diet culture?
Oh, absolutely. I think when Jimmy Kimmel came out in the Oscars a couple of years ago and said, "Well, looking around at this audience, I'm wondering, is Ozempic right for me?" That really
Yeah,
was
I
the
remember that. Yeah.
yes, and that's when it really became in our face. We were hearing stories, and then we were kind of seeing transformation of celebrities and wondering, there was a lot of talk and chatter. Is that person on Ozempic? Is that person on Ozempic? And when Jimmy Kimmel came out and said that, I think it implanted in the minds of most people, that's how they're doing it. That's how they're this thin. I got to get on this myself. And you saw a great rise in the, taking of these medications, trying to find them however they could, going to compounding pharmacies, going to weight loss spas. It really ignited this desire for extreme thinness. But when before we were kind of in a body positivity movement where it was all about accepting yourself as you are and working towards, your own version of health, it was just such a much more self-compassionate and compassionate way to view health. And now we're kind of swung back to the other side to this extreme thinness and emaciation and looking at these medications as the magic pill to get you there as quickly as possible.
Now, obesity is a problem in this country, and also diabetes. And these medications, that's what they're for. It does help with that, right? So you're saying it's more of the people who take it before the aesthetic purposes that's causing bigger problems.
Absolutely. There is totally a place for these weight loss medications, especially in the treatment of diabetes. And I also think that, that can be a frontline treatment, but it also can be, back of the line treatment if you're really looking at nutrition and you're looking at how the body loses weight and how even diabetes becomes a disease in your body. I think there's so many misconceptions about food and nutrition, and where we need to really educate people is for the person who's developed diabetes and how you can actually reverse that naturally and with the help of these medications. But when we're seeing it used for weight loss, especially extreme weight loss, what I'm seeing on my end is a massive rise in disordered eating and eating disorders that can come from the use of these medications. And that's really important to address. And I don't think we're necessarily doing the best job of that, especially when it comes to the media. That's why I think it's so important that you're doing shows like this and that you're really trying to educate people on the potential harms of these medications.
Now, you've been vocal on social media about the impacts of these medications. In one of your videos, you discussed that certain foods can naturally mimic the effects of GLP-1 medications. Can you share more about how diet alone can achieve some of the similar results that these drugs do?
Absolutely. Yay, I'm so glad you asked, because I think it's so important that people understand that GLP-1 is made naturally in the body. And that is, I think kind of surprising to people. I don't think that they really understand that semaglutide is a GLP-1 agonist, meaning it's acting like GLP-1. So one of the best things that we can do is kind of get in tune with our circadian rhythms and then understand the foods that help create more GLP-1. And the first thing that most people do when they're dieting is they skip breakfast. And that's one of the worst things that you can do, because that is actually when GLP-1 is made more in the body than any other time of the day. So eating breakfast is really key, but also what you're eating is really important. And starches, which is another thing that people tell you not to eat when you're dieting, can help you to create more GLP-1. So things like oatmeal in the morning or things with lots of fiber help you create your own GLP-1, but also legumes and spinach, all sorts of beans and legumes. Those are all the types of food, but especially fibrous foods that help you produce GLP-1. But there's also lifestyle things that can help boost it as well. And that's getting plenty of sleep, maintaining and reducing your stress levels, because cortisol works against GLP-1 production, and eating the majority, like a bigger amount of your calories earlier in the day and slowly progressing to fewer and fewer calories, making your dinner a lighter dinner than, say, your breakfast. All of these contribute to production of GLP-1.
Do you think people are just jumping the gun on these medications instead of trying lifestyle changes first? Or do you think that everyone has tried the lifestyle changes and given up, and that's why these medications have just grown in popularity so much?
Well, I think the media and diet culture like to promote certain diets. And right now we're in this whole low carb, high protein craze. And actually that works against most people's weight loss. So when they say, I've tried everything, what they mean is they've tried all of the diets that are out there right now. And when you look at, a high protein, low carb diet, it's very hard to maintain. Your body doesn't need that much protein. It needs maximum, maybe 10 to 30% maximum of your calories. And really, more importantly, if you get it from plant sources, you're going to be doing your body a lot better than if you're really kind of going crazy on animal protein, because the body doesn't like that. And that's, you know, big driver of diabetes and cancer and heart disease and weight gain. So you're seeing just so much misinformation. And if people understood that if we return to a more natural style of eating, one that we evolved into, which is trying to be more plant forward, meaning you get vegetables, you get fruit, you get whole grains, beans, and legumes as the majority of your diet, you don't even have to diet to lose weight. So there's just, you know, I think this disconnect. And a lot of people, you know, they may go on a high protein, low carb diet and lose weight quickly, but that weight is usually water and muscle, and very little of it is fat. And that's because you're, you know, not giving your body the calories, the type of nutrients that it needs, but you're also halving your calories, meaning you're cutting your calories in half. And so all of that works against the body. And you'll see this with the weight loss medications as well. And once people go off the diet or they go off the medication, your body kicks into what's called compensatory hyperphagia, which just means I'm going to make up for what I lost by eating a lot. You tend to eat a lot, and then you gain all of that weight back and more. So it's really just a futile effort. And we need to help people understand the types of foods, the patterns of eating that will help them lose weight naturally without even trying to diet.
That was Dr. Supatra Tovar, a clinical psychologist and registered dietitian. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Coming up, we're going to talk with a Cleveland Clinic physician who is an obesity medication specialist. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Each morning, it's a new opportunity, a chance to start fresh. Up First from NPR makes each morning an opportunity to learn and to understand. Choose to join the world every morning with Up First, a podcast that hands you everything going on across the globe and down the street, all in 15 minutes or less. Start your day informed and anew with Up First by subscribing wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. Who should be taking GLP-1 medications? Some say it's only those with diabetes, and some say it should be fair game for anyone, even if they just need to lose a couple of pounds. If GLP-1 medications have helped so many people combat obesity, there must be benefits beyond just treating diabetes. Joining us now is Dr. W. Scott Butch. He is an internationally recognized obesity medicine physician, educator, and policy leader. He also serves as the director of obesity medicine at the Bariatric and Metabolic Institute at the Cleveland Clinic. Welcome to All Sides, Dr. Butch.
Thanks, Amy. Thanks for having me.
Now, Dr. Butch is talking with us about GLP-1 medications in general and not specific brands and how they can help combat obesity. Doctor, what factors determine whether a patient is a good candidate for these drugs?
So these medications, specifically these GLP-1 receptor agonists, have been around for 20 years. So they've basically been able to treat people who have diabetes and obesity primarily.
And if they've been around for 20 years, why are we hearing so much more about them now?
Yeah, you know, these are medications that their efficacy, the effect on body weight was not as good as it is today. So really the last 3 years, we've seen these two highly effective long-acting weekly doses of GLP-1 receptors agonists be very effective for body weight control. And that's really what's sort of topped us all off into this craze.
Now, how do you feel as someone who has known these medications for a really long time about having them be talked about all the time and they're everywhere? Are you having more and more people asking you about them?
For sure that's happening, Amy. You know, we have these medications that really haven't been effective in the past. So finally, individuals are able to get highly effective medical therapy for the treating their obesity. Obviously, I see patients every day who have obesity, but I think in general, People are very interested in what the benefits of these drugs can be.
Now, you, whenever I introduced you, you're the director of obesity medicine at the Bariatric and Metabolic Institute. So what we've heard about for years whenever it comes for losing weight, is gastric bypass surgery and, you know, shrinking the size of the stomach. Are these medications making that less necessary?
You know, what we're seeing is that these medications work in a similar way, actually, bariatric surgery does. The old way of thinking was that surgery gave you a small stomach, and because you have a small stomach, you ate less food, and that's why you lost weight. But we've known over the last 20 to almost 30 years now that the surgery changes our body. It changes the way our body regulates our body fat, and we're able to lose weight, not necessarily only due to eating less food. It changes the bacteria in our guts, it changes hormones in our body, much exactly like GLP-1, the GLP-1 hormones. So now we're seeing drugs that are able, you know, these drugs mimic a hormone in the gut, in the digestive tract, and how it in when it responds to food, it sends a signal to your brain, to the area that actually regulates your body fat and your metabolism. And that's why we're seeing such a strong effect from these medications. But it's not gonna lead to less surgery. I think it'll actually lead to people getting more appropriate treatment, whether that's medical or surgical therapies.
Yeah, so tell me about that more appropriate treatment. So how do you decide if someone is a it, will do better on the medication or needs the surgery or what whenever you're giving them advice?
You know, this is a difficult challenge, you know, for us as specialists in the field of obesity. Is that we don't know what medication or what surgical procedure is going to work well for one person versus the next. Over the years, we've obviously learned some factors that play a role, but still, it's hard to gauge what that individual response to the treatment may be, whether that's medication or a surgical procedure. So, you know, what we do best is we have a comprehensive evaluation of patients who have obesity. From a standpoint of their physical activity, their nutrition status, their sleep status, psychologically how they're doing, medically how they're doing. And that sort of comprehensive evaluation leads us to more appropriate treatment in terms of finding that right person for the right treatment option.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking with obesity medicine physician, educator, and policy leader, Dr. W. Scott Butch. Now, there's been a lot of talk on social media about people who don't have diabetes. They're depleting resources with these medications. And as a doctor who deals with patients with obesity and diabetes both, have you found a sh are there a, is there a shortage of these drugs for patients?
Currently, there's not a shortage of these drugs, but you can imagine when these medications were first approved by the FDA for the treatment of obesity, and then a year later, the treatment of diabetes, we see that, you know, and they're highly effective. We see that everybody is very interested in knowing more about them and wanting to have that option of having a medication like these help them lose weight and obviously feel better. You know, the thing is that, you know, not everybody is coming to a subspecialist like myself. You're having a whole crop of providers out there. You're having telehealth companies. You're having spas. You're having a lot of different providers prescribe these medications, which, again, if you think about the old way of thinking around obesity and that the medication's just an appetite suppressant, well, then you think, oh, it's easy. I'll just help my patient by giving this medication, but these medications do far more than just make someone feel less hunger and therefore eat less potentially. And so I think that's where people are running into trouble. You're getting individuals who don't know how to prescribe these medications and manage patients, and then you're getting individuals who think, well, this medication's like the old diet pills of yesteryear that's going to be some quick fix to my hunger.
Yeah, tell me about these medications. Do we still not have enough long-term knowledge to know exactly what happens whenever you go off them, or are we getting there with understanding how long you have to be on this medication?
No, I think what we need to understand is that if we think about these medications like a medication that treats another chronic disease, let's say high blood pressure or high cholesterol, I don't think the conversation we're having today is, well, how long do I have to be on my cholesterol medication? or when can I get off my high blood pressure medication? This is, something that is a conversation between the patient and the provider, a clinician, and that gauge that disease risk and then use the medication in a way that is helpful for them to reduce their disease risk. Meaning that if you use a medication like an obesity medication that we're talking about, you may need to use it for a long time. And I think if we understand that these medications do far more than just suppress somebody's appetite, they change the physiology of the body and allow that person to regulate their weight at a lower weight range, then we can understand and appreciate that a long-term therapy with these medications is quite normal, just like we do in every other condition.
Yeah, that's a good way to explain it, versus other drugs that you stay on your cholesterol medication and that kind of thing. Tell me about you've mentioned a couple of times the other things it does. So it doesn't just suppress your appetite or make you want to eat less. What else is happening to people when they take these medications?
So what we understand about, mimicking these gut hormones. Again, these hormones are released into the bloodstream after food is passed through the intestines. And so the thought initially was these drugs help our body's insulin response to detecting sugar in the blood, and therefore a great treatment for diabetes. What we didn't appreciate at the time is that they penetrate the brain, the hypothalamus, and within the hypothalamus, the area which regulates our body fat, food intake, appetite, and metabolism. So what we're seeing is that this penetration of these drugs, allows people not only to have benefits in their blood sugar levels and their weight, but it also is penetrating other areas of the brain that make people think less about food, this so-called food noise. We see studies out about decreasing substance use. So it's affecting sort of this hedonistic part of our brain that craves and desires. And so it really is having broad implications, not only on the body, but also on the brain. And obviously, studies are ongoing in all these areas.
And how much work have you done with people with diabetes and how it impacts in that area?
Well, I just saw somebody today whose blood sugar levels have gone down tremendously over a period of a year, has very well controlled diabetes on this medication, also has lost 60 pounds. And so it's sort of like a twofer. We're getting a double benefit with this medication. And others we're seeing, they talk about, well, I stopped smoking and I'm losing weight, or I no longer have sleep apnea and I'm losing weight. So we're seeing all the broad effects of when somebody loses weight have on both as cardiometabolic outcomes as well as neurological and substance use outcomes.
Now, for these medications in your practice, for the most part, do you see that insurance covers them for the patients? Because I've been reading a lot about them being very expensive.
Yeah, I mean, herein lies my career of trying to get CMS, Medicare, Medicaid services to cover these medications, which would have broad benefits across the entire United States. But that has been a 13-year project that many, many of us have been working on that is still in the works with the new administration. Insurance companies have largely, I mean, imagine if you don't think obesity is a disease and you think it's just a behavioral problem that all people who are overweight are just eating too much and not exercising and have these broad stereotypes and not knowing that this is a disease that is a dysregulation of a system in our body that's supposed to regulate things. Well, then you're not going to cover these medications. And so what we've seen in my entire career is that we've had poor coverage. And now what we're seeing compounding this is the fact that these are, highly costly. And so you're seeing people almost giving an excuse like, well, see, I don't need to cover it anyway because they're more expensive. But all deep inside, it's probably, I don't really think that obesity is a disease, and I don't think people should need to be on these medications. So what we're seeing in the last 3 years is that the popularity of these drugs is uncovering sort of this hidden bias that we see not only in insurance companies, but in clinicians and teachers and family members. And that's concerning.
Tell me about your mission to make for everyone to know that obesity as a disease. You talk about wanting to change the language. So what's the yeah. terminology that people yeah. are using that I probably just did incorrectly? So
no, and the thing is, you know, there's no need to slap people on the hands. I think by using the right language, I think that shows that we appreciate the current knowledge that this is a disease. So instead of saying somebody is obese or morbidly obese, and think about the term morbid, which means grosser than gross, we're basically calling people gross. And that judgment that has seen, you know, when we see somebody with a bag of chips eating, somebody who has obesity eating a bag of chips, we think about them probably far differently than if we see somebody who is thin who's eating a bag of chips. So that judgment is sort of folded over on top of our language. So we should really use first person language, saying the person who has diabetes or the person who has obesity. Instead of saying morbid, we should say that this is a severe form of the disease or a mild form of the disease, not, someone who's morbid or gross.
Yeah.
So,
and I know that, you know, these medications broadly are called GLP-1 medications, and there's lots of different brands. Have you found that people have different side effects with different brands? I guess it's just like any other medication where, you know, some people react to one differently than another.
Exactly. I mean, think about all the different brands of cholesterol medications that are out there that have the same mechanism of action in these so-called statins. Similarly, you're going to see over the next 5 years, broad approvals for different combinations and different medications that mimic different gut hormones that are going to be very effective for treating diabetes, obesity, sleep apnea, kidney disease, et cetera. So when we use these medications, we don't know on that one person how the drug is going to work. We don't know if it's going to cause a side effect. So it's much like any other chronic illness, is that we sort of monitor people frequently in the beginning, seeing if they tolerate the medication and it's doing its job. And if so, then we find the right dose and look for the outcomes later on.
My previous guest was talking about how she's seen some people who their appetite is suppressed so much that they only consume maybe like 800 calories a day. Are you seeing anything dramatic like that? Because that's not enough calories to actually sustain you.
No, and I think that's because, you know, I'm a specialist in the area, and I understand that these drugs are going to have an impact on someone's hunger. Mm-hmm. Again, in the old way of thinking, if you said, okay, the goal to lose weight is to not eat and eat as little as possible, mm-hmm. and then you're giving a medication that suppresses an appetite, you're like, great, this is a great combination. I'm just not going to eat, and I'm going to be, quote unquote, successful in losing weight. And that mentality, if not caught by the provider, who should understand that it's not about maximizing the dose in everybody, that I have people on low doses of medications for over a decade who do perfectly fine and don't need the highest dose. But it is more suppression of appetite. Again, this old adage that it's all about suppressing one's appetite. If we have more is better. So more drug dose, higher dose, is better than a lower dose. Well, that's just not the case. And I think in the situation that the last speaker was talking about, I didn't hear it, but is one of this nature of mismanagement and probably not recognizing the impact of the drug on the brain and appetite.
Have you seen any problems with muscle loss on the medication, where people need to be exercising to build muscle?
Yeah, and that's a good question, because I think another sort of hot topic these days is the loss of muscle mass. But this is all adaptive, meaning if you go on a diet or start to exercise and you're losing weight, you're going to lose muscle because your muscle is used to carrying a bigger body, a heavier body. And so regardless of how we lose weight, whether it's surgery or medication induced or just sort of diet induced weight loss, we see muscle loss. I mean, that's, you know, having these sort of, changes in one's face or one's backside or, you know, all these kind of hot topics of weight loss is very normal. Mm-hmm. I think when you get into situations, it's people who lose too much, like you just said, who are under eating and not obviously aware or thinking it's a positive to under eat. And then obviously not doing resistance training or some kind of strengthening, understanding that the body is going to lose muscle when you lose weight. And I think that's where people getting into trouble. But it's a very, very small percentage of people, and it's easily treated.
Well, I want to thank you so much for your time. That was obesity medicine physician Dr. W. Scott Butch. Thank you for joining us today.
Amy, thanks for your time and thanks for the invitation.
And coming up, we're going to be talking with a Dayton Med Spa owner and a medical director about cosmetic weight loss. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Each morning, it's a new opportunity, a chance to start fresh. A First from NPR makes each morning an opportunity to learn and to understand. Choose to join the world every morning with Up First, a podcast that hands you everything going on across the globe and down the street, all in 15 minutes or less. Start your day informed and anew with Up First by subscribing wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. Apart from GLP-1 medications such as Ozempic being used for diabetes patients and food addictions, it also is being used for those who are simply looking to lose some extra weight. This option has been controversial, with people on social media arguing that Ozempic should only be for those who really need it, or if it should be available for everyone. Local facilities called med spas offer medical-grade aesthetic procedures in a spa setting. They are run by licensed professionals and medical directors, which means that they are prescribing medications like Ozempic. Joining us now is the medical director of a Dayton med spa called Imam Aesthetics, Dr. Jungahir Unsari. Welcome to All Sides, Dr. J.
Hi, Amy.
Thank you so much for joining us. Now, your med spa offers a weight loss program, and these weight loss drugs are included in the program. Do you offer just Ozempic, or do you offer other forms of the drug as well?
So far, we just are offering semaglutide, which is also trade name like Ozempic, and then tirzepatide, which is also in the market is known as Wegovy. It's Zepbound for weight loss.
Okay, so the drugs like Ozempic and Zepbound, so people come to you. Have they been diagnosed with, had you see people who have been diagnosed with obesity or diabetes, or are you seeing people who are more looking for weight loss for other reasons?
So we use a different sort of like inclusion criteria. Mm-hmm. It's not for everyone. People who have a BMI of over 30 are the ones who usually... it's recommended for weight loss for those people. And then we use a different kind of criteria, which is like BMI over 25 plus a metabolic syndrome. That would be like your insulin resistance, somebody with PCOS or high blood pressure. So it's kind of like case by case if they really qualify for these medications. Anybody who's less than 25 BMI, I usually refrain from offering these sort of drugs to them.
Now, your program that your med spa offers includes custom meals and exercise plans, as well as follow-ups. Are those options for all members of this program or only for ones who are not taking any weight loss drugs?
No. So this is specifically designed for people who are on the weight loss program. Mm-hmm. So if they're on these drugs, that's when they get to kind of join the meal plans as well as the exercise plan. So it kind of comes with the package where we're doing designing the whole plan for them. Because if somebody's on these drugs for long term, we have seen certain side effects happening, like protein loss, and if they're not eating proper meals, then certainly they will develop some deficiencies. So I created a plan where we are kind of supplementing those right from the start so that we don't are playing catch up, like once that lead to significant weight loss in the next few months.
Now, the idea of taking these medications, you mentioned the side effects. There's lots of side effects listed, from mental health disorders to stomach concerns, digestive concerns. Do you talk with your patients and the people who visit the med spa about the side effects, and how do you keep track of that with them?
Yeah, so absolutely. I mean, this is one of the most important things that you should have the conversation at the start before you even put them on these drugs, that what they're getting into. So anytime you're putting these drugs, starting patients on these drugs, you have to tell them certain side effects that are common, like, basic side effects that people can experience are the nausea, vomiting, constipation, some irritability, and sometimes serious side effects such as pancreatitis. So you have to kind of tell patients about these side effects beforehand so that they know what they're getting into. And another thing I try to mention is that we're not putting you on these drugs for long term. This is not the long-term solution for you, where you're going to be on these drugs for lifelong. Usually I kind of train their mind that we're going to be on these drugs for 6 to 12 months, and we'll create habits, good habits with exercise and the weight loss, meal plan, that you can keep yourself on track. And once you get to your goal, we slowly take wean you off from these drugs. So those long-term side effects, such as gastroparesis and certain other conditions, do not develop.
Now, the last guest I was talking to, he would say that these drugs, you can be on them long term if you actually are obese and have diabetes, because they're a medication that is helping you. So are most of your patients not in that category if you're using them more as like a help to get them to the weight that they want to be and then stop?
Right. So since we are a med spa, we are not treating diabetes. We are helping people with more weight loss. So that's why, yes, people who are diabetic, they can be on, long term on these drugs. But weight loss program should be not be designed for long term. I think, in my view, it's when you get to your goal, you slowly wean them off, because they really don't need those drugs. Because then we get to the complications of, of vitamin deficiencies, hair loss, Ozempic faces, that's more common. So you don't want to take the patient once, as soon as they leave, get to a healthy BMI, we need to start talking about, let's get you off. I know a lot of clients of mine, when they get to the healthy BMI, they start talking about they want to be on this drug because they like themselves. But I always tell them that, yes, but you're also risking yourself for some deficiencies and long-term side effects, which you don't need to have. Since you got to your goal, we get you out of these drugs, and then now you maintain your weight in a healthy way by, eating right and also exercising regularly, which are the most, the cornerstone of any weight loss program.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News, and we're talking about GLP-1 medications such as Ozempic and their use for weight loss with Dr. J, the owner of a med spa in Dayton called Imam Aesthetics. So your patients, are they paying you out of pocket for these drugs, or do you take insurance?
No. So these drugs, since they're specifically designed for weight loss, and they're not covered by insurance, so we use compounded pharmacies to get these drugs directly from, those pharmacies to our clinics when clients signed up for it.
Now, there have been many new knockoff versions of Ozempic on the market. They are not FDA approved, but they are cheaper, more easily accessible. There's been multiple med spa locations across Ohio that have had their licenses suspended due to getting some of these drugs from unlicensed sellers. So this is giving a lot of med spas a bad look. How do you ensure the safety and credibility of the medications that you get?
So the pharmacy we work with are, registered in US. They are legal. Some of the bad rep came from, like, when people are ex importing these drugs from, like, foreign countries, such as like South America, and they were the ones who would be offering these drugs like very cheap. You have to maintain quality for these drugs when you're getting it shipped from the pharmacy directly. It needs to be in a cold environment. It needs to be on a dry ice. So I think a lot of complaints that happened was when people imported it from other countries. I think as long as your pharmacy is registered in US and they're giving you the right product, you're not getting in trouble. But that being said, yes, FDA approved is something that Ozempic, which is made by Lilly, and the other company that makes tirzepatide, are they're the legal manufacturer of those brand names. So that's why when we use the term, Ozempic or tirzepatide, we really don't want to say those drug names because they're kind of like brand names for those companies. So we usually use pharmaceutical names to replace that. So since we're getting it from the pharmacy directly, so we offer semaglutide and tirzepatide, which are generic pharmaceutical names, not bounded to any brand names.
Now, do your patients, I mean, are these expensive? I know that the price keeps fluctuating and the supply, there's a supply and demand issue. Right. Are you finding it getting, is it more expensive than a few months ago?
So yes, the prices do keep changing. Tirzepatide is slightly more expensive than Ozempic. Ozempic is, you know, and that leads to the way they are made, how the pharmacies are able to get the components to make these drugs. That's what they tell us, that why the price difference. And tirzepatide seems to be a little more expensive just because the results in the studies have been better compared to semaglutide, which is Ozempic, a lot of people know as. So that's another reason why the tirzepatide price is slightly more than Ozempic, than semaglutide.
Do you have any issues with where you feel like you're buying these medications and it's taking away resources from those with diabetes because of the supply and demand issue?
I think no. And the reason being is because the people who have diabetes, they're getting these medications covered by insurance, and they're getting the brand name Ozempic, those sort of medications. Since most of our medications are coming directly from compounding pharmacies, which are, again, registered, you know, all legal, they tend to come from them, and they're usually not covered by the insurance, because you can get it directly from the brand manufacturer if you have the insurance. So I think we are kind of just covering those clients who are not able to access that expensive medications. So we are giving them a cheaper option compared to if they pay out of pocket for, let's say, a brand name Ozempic or tirzepatide.
Now, there's been a lot of fear mongering on both sides of this issue, right? Where there's people who say that they are comfortable with taking a weight loss drug. And then there's people on the other side saying that, you know, we shouldn't be taking these drugs and we should be doing, you know, diet and exercise in the old fashioned way. Do most people who are coming to your med spa, is this what they're looking for? They want someone who is going to tell them it's okay to take this medication?
No. So like I told you, that I tell them like straight up that, yes, we're going to do this together, but we need to have a backup plan of when to come off. And that's how I always start my conversation. Because mentioned before, I don't want them to be on these, you know, medications long term. But coming back to your point, that people do want to be on these drugs, you know, long term. But then that's where the education, you know, comes to play, that you tell them that we need to come off at a certain point.
Have you seen on social media, there's everything with like Ozempic face, Ozempic butt, Ozempic personality. Have you seen that in your med spa?
So exactly. So these are the complications that you would start seeing when somebody is on these medications long term. So when protein deficiencies is one of the main reasons. So when these drugs are started, you know, when you start the patients on these drugs, this drug doesn't just, you know, go again only on the adipose tissues of the body. It doesn't pick and choose. It will go everywhere and start making you lose weight and break down your protein and break down your fat. It'll kind of break down pretty much everything. So you need to maintain a certain content of protein diet to prevent those side effects. Plus, you need to make sure that you tell your clients that once we get to a certain point, let's come off of these medications, because then, yes, you will see those Ozempic faces, the Ozempic butt, because you're losing your muscle mass if you're on these drugs long term. So again, in order to prevent that, protein diet, making patients know that this is not a long-term solution. And I think with that frame of mind, I've seen that in my practice. I've so far not seen these results, because I'm very judicious with them and I've been honest with them. And when we get to that point, I start tapering them off.
Right. That's what I was going to say. So you're their access to the drug. So you can, they come in, you check in on them, and then you say, we're going to start tapering you off. And eventually I'm going to let you go. Is that how it goes?
Right. Exactly.
And I'm not sure how long your med spa has been around, but how long have you, we only have about a minute left, but how long have you been using these weight loss drugs? Because the previous doctor we were talking to has said they've been around for a long time, but they're like more well-known and popular now.
Yeah. So, I mean, the drugs came into market as a diabetic drug back in early 2020s when they came, really got approved. And that's when we really found that, okay, this is also, you know, making people lose weight. And then the more studies came for the weight loss. So I've been using these drugs as a, you know, as a professional for treating diabetes for like 4 or 5 years, but for weight loss for about a year.
So for weight loss for about a year. Okay. Well, I want to thank you for your time today. That was Dr. J, the owner and medical director for a local Dayton med spa called Imam Aesthetics. Dr. J, thank you for joining us.
My pleasure. Thank you, Amy.
And this has been All Sides with Amy Jurevich on 89.7 NPR News.